Welcome to the CEN Show, the platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani, and on the panel this evening, we have Brother Hembrick, we got Professor Amin Ra, and Brother Ahi. Tonight, we're going to have Brother Muko host. Brother Muko has been with us since the start, before we even started the CEN Show. And so I appreciate Brother Muko coming on, and also he's responsible for our guest this evening, and I'm enthused about the brother that's going to speak today. So Brother Muko, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you, and it's all yours, brother.
Definitely. Good evening to my care unit, the Community Educational Network, and tonight, we will present our works and be joined by Mr. Edward L. Williams Jr. and his work, book actually, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy. So I just wanted to expound on Mr. Williams. He has a platform, counter-racism.com, for victims of racism, white supremacy. I utilize it myself, and it's very, very informative and constructive for victims of racism, white supremacy. So I would definitely, advise victims of racism, white supremacy, to utilize this platform. And, as the great grandsister Nellie Fuller always used to say, we are still learning. Definitely learn and perfect your counter-racist science skills from using this platform and other various platforms as well. But tonight we're talking about Mr. Williams' platform and his works, which I feel is very, very important to establishing a system of justice with those two guarantees in place. So I would like to welcome Mr. Edward Williams to the show broadcast.
Thank you, sir.
How you
Thank
doing,
you for the
man?
welcome. Yes, sir.
Definitely.
Doing good. Thank you.
Definitely. Well, we're here to definitely discuss your work, and I would like to ask you if there's anything else you wanted to say about your, experience in attempting to counter racism, white supremacy, and, anything else that I missed that you want to add for the, the family and the listeners.
No, sir, not at this time. You did an excellent job. Thank you.
All right. Well, today we will be discussing your book on how to support and defend the United States Constitution, definitely, which I feel is a definite profound piece of work. Can you first explain to us, how did you come about writing this book and your inspiration for this book?
Well, it was years ago, I think in 2005, I started writing with experiencing things on the job, certain setbacks, etc., which are part of the book. I explained it under the chapter Practical Applications. And when talking with Mr. Fuller, he referred me to a program that he participated in with another gentleman to take a listen to. I took a listen to it and said, well, it was very interesting, but I didn't know whether or not some of those concepts would work in real life, as they say. So I began to put together some experiments using the scientific method, as it's generally called, the scientific method. And actually run those science experiments while on the job. It's a scary thing for anyone who attempts to do that. It takes a lot of thought A lot of rereading, going over, making sure the logic is correct, making sure the wording is correct, etc. In order to get the result that you're looking for.
Okay. And you mentioned the logic. Can you explain the logic for the listeners that may be, just so they can understand your meaning of logic and what it means when you use it in your experiment?
Yes, sir. When I say the logic, I'm referring to counter-racism logic, right? Logic basically is the process for doing something and doing it. That's in very basic generic terms, the process for doing something and doing it. For example, there's a process for building an automobile that you can drive 50 miles an hour for 100 miles. There's a process for doing that. And the proof that there's a process for doing that is that you actually do it. That's that and doing it part. So there's a process for doing something and doing it. Counter-racism logic is that there is a process, conceptually, there is a process for working against the system of racism, white supremacy. And at the same time, producing a system of justice. You have to make sure that you keep those two connected. Because if you don't, you can work against the system of racism, white supremacy, eventually get rid of it. And if you haven't produced a system of justice at the same time, then you may get a different kind of supremacy. So you have to make sure that you keep those two connected. In fact, many times when I'm asked, well, what is counter-racism? I'll just say it's a process for producing a system of justice. I won't even discuss the part about getting rid of the system because producing a system of justice will get rid of the system of racism, white supremacy.
Definitely sounds, according to the logic that and the evidence that does sound logical. You explain in your work about the use of words and the importance of the use of words. Can you elaborate on the importance of the use of words and how it pertains to the victims of racism, white supremacy, and the condition that we're currently in?
Well, and it really depends, in general terms, of course, the words that people use on a day-to-day basis are very confusing, and that's because the language that we speak and most of the languages that are spoken by people on this planet are very confusing because they have to abide by the rules put in place by the smartest, most powerful white people. So even if their language has been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, it doesn't matter. They change it so that it complies with those rules. Now that's in general. As it pertains to countering racism, meaning producing a system of justice, it's very important that the victims of racism, white supremacy, keep the language as simple as possible. Now, what do I mean by that? so that a 5-year-old can understand it. I had some experience with this, having a 5-year-old child many years ago. And once I was able to get her to understand it, I knew I was on the right path. So it's very important to keep the language as simple as possible.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that and understand that. In your work, as we go deeper into your work, I see the term counter-racism science. Can you explain what that means for the audience?
Yes, sir. So, I was first introduced to the concept of counter-racism. I remember having a conversation with Mr. Fuller, and who actually wrote the first book that I have ever seen on how to counter the worldwide system of racism, white supremacy. And I was standing there and I was going through the book and I said, okay, Mr. Fuller, what is this? I'm already doing this. I'm already doing this. I'm already doing, what is this? What's so special about this book? And we had a lengthy conversation about the concept and how to apply it on a day-to-day basis. And it was very eye-opening from my perspective. I had just completed a part of my life that I describe as my Afrocentric period. I'm sure we've all had that period, and some of us are probably already in it, still in it. So I was looking for something more, something that aligned with what I believed at the time was my purpose for being on the planet. Counter-racism is part of that. Now, in my studies and in the books that I've written, counter-racism science, I first used it to experiment with different concepts in Mr. Fuller's work to see what the scientific conclusion would be using the scientific method. Now, there are those that say counter-racism science and they refer to trial and error, right? Which is not a bad concept. Trial and error is not a bad concept. The problem with that, for me, only for me, but the problem with that is that as a black person, I'm not in the position to be able to do trial and error all the time. I need some rapid, focused, experiments to be able to run, so that I can see what the result is going to be. The white people who practice racism, white supremacy, largely use trial and error, but they're in a position to be able to do that. They're in the powerful position. As a black person, I am in an inferior position as it relates to power compared to their power. So I needed some kind of method that I could use to be able to test things in the work that Mr. Fuller produced and the scientific method worked well for me at that time and still does.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that detailed answer. And I would like to also add that those experiments that Mr. Williams are speaking of. some of those experiments, a lot of those experiments is on the website. You want to inform people about that, Mr. Williams?
Yes, sir. And not only experiments that I've written and run, but that other people have also written and run. After building the website, we initially had something that was called a discussion board. And there were a lot of people writing a lot of things. There were a lot of white people on there, writing a lot of things, talking about black people, blah, 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 the usual things that white people do. And it would discourage some of the black people from even posting because they didn't know how to handle what was being said. And so I kind of changed the format to the counter-racism work study project, which is what it is now. So I've written some counter-racism science. I'm sorry. So I've written some counter-racism science experiments. I tried to write enough to get people going. People began to write their own. They began to run their own. I run other people's. People run mine. But there was something very interesting about that format change, which was when it became the counter-racism work study project, where you had to submit a counter-racism science experiment, the white people disappeared. And eventually, some of the black people disappeared. We generally don't think in a scientific manner. So that was to be expected. In fact, I wrote a counter-racism science experiment, and it's there on the work study project where I foretold that that was going to happen. And in fact, it came true.
Okay, cause and effect. That's definitely a real thing. You mentioned a technique in your book, but before I mention that technique, we often come across a question. And when I seen this question in your book, it is actually fairly in the beginning on page 10, what is a code? That is usually found followed by what does the code being the leader means? Can you explain that real quickly?
Well, there are those that say the code is the leader. But counter-racism does not say that. And when I say counter-racism does not say that, I mean counter-racism logic does not say that the code is the leader. It says counter-racism logic is the leader. And if you've ever heard Mr. Fuller talk, you probably heard him say, follow the logic. He never says follow the code. He says follow the logic because the logic will take you exactly where you need to go. Anyone can write something and say that it's counter-racism code. In fact, myself and others have gotten Mr. Fuller to change some of the things that were in his initial book. And you'll see them changed in the second book, the 2016 version of the book. So if the code is the leader, then it's constantly changing. It's constantly evolving. It's constantly improving. It's constantly being refined. And so you might find yourself in a position where you'll try something that's said to be counter-racism code in 2009 and find out with the second edition of Mr. Fuller's book, that's either been changed or it's not in the second edition at all. Probably because it was found to be ineffective.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate that. And that's definitely been a question in some people's minds who had the second, I mean, the first 84 edition and the 2016 edition, and even individuals who have your work as well and study those three individual works, kind of side by side. So thank you for clearing that up.
Yes, sir.
Because we definitely, I think even Mr. Fuller even made a point of saying that. So yeah, thank you for that information. You have a term in your book that I really, really, really enjoy practicing sometimes. Well, I enjoy practicing it a lot. And this is called counter-racist jujitsu. Can you please explain that to the crowd and what that means and how it works?
Yes, sir. Now that I've explained what counter-racism is, I'll explain briefly what jujitsu is, then I'll get into answering your have an idea of what jujitsu is. It's a way weight or strength against them. That's in generic terms. Is just a little different in that you want your opponent to use their weight or their strength, and you use your understanding. Example, if you're on the job and you have a problem and you go to the top person or the person underneath them, you want that person to be able to solve your problem. So you let them use their strength. You let them use their position to ensure that you're not harmed. That's the primary objective. So counter-racism jiu-jitsu is a little bit different than just jiu-jitsu in that regard. And overall, it's different because you use counter-racism jiu-jitsu, of course, to work against the system of racism, white supremacy. That is your opponent, not white people. But the system itself.
Okay. Clear for individuals listening. In using counter-racist jiu-jitsu, you stated in your book, and I hope I'm not losing anyone with this, but you stated in your book the logic for producing a counter-racism code, and for individuals that may have the book, this is on page 25. And those are 5 points that you have for producing counter-racist codes. Can you explain those in a little detail, simply for the listeners to understand and may not have the book?
Oh, sure. So the first one, it's listed in 5 steps if you don't have the book, and I'll read each step and give a brief explanation of what it means. First thing is to look at things just the way that they are. Now, that may sound simple, But it's really difficult to do because people use words to think with. And we've already established that the use of words is very confusing. So you look at things just the way that they are. I once heard a quote. I say it a little different than when I heard it. How did it go? Where someone was explaining that the eyes are just a tool of the mind. Nobody sees with their eyes. They look with their eyes, but it's their mind that makes sense of what the eyes are looking at. And they gave a couple of examples of that. They said, for example, if your mind is blind, it doesn't matter what your eyes are looking at. Basically, you're not going to understand it, right? But when the mind can see, it doesn't matter if your eyes are blind. I don't know if you've ever seen a blind person feel on someone's face. It's so that they can see them in their mind. So the hands are a tool of the mind, just like the eyes are. The stick that you see blind people using is a tool of the mind so that they can understand what's going on around them, things of that nature. So when I say look at things just the way that they are, your mind plays a part in that because you have to tell yourself the truth of what it is that you're looking at. That's the biggest part. Number two, then figure out why those things are the way that they are. Again, you'll have to tell yourself the truth in that regard as well. You can't escape that. And the thing about why is you may never figure out why. So you don't stay on number two too long. That's the idea. You don't get caught up in the paralysis of analysis, so to speak. So you get enough information about why it is that you think things are that way. Then you move to step three. Then figure out whether that thing should be doing what it's doing or if it shouldn't. You have to make that decision based on the information that you've gathered in step two. Then you move to step four. If it's decided that that thing shouldn't be doing what it's doing, then you have to figure out a way to stop that thing, that person, that whatever it is from doing what it's doing if it's destructive. Only if it's destructive. Then step five is to figure out the constructive thing to do.
Very detailed, and I definitely like that. I'm a take this time to ask anyone that may be in the audience. Do anyone have any questions for Mr. Williams for what you heard so far?
Let me go around the panel and see, and I'll go to each person and see if they have a quick question. Ernest, do you have a question for Mr. Williams?
No, I kind of got in a little bit late because I was trying to get the concept of it, but I kind of think it's like when they started Cal Berkeley when that guy sued for white racism. And I always thought in my mind, there's no such thing as white racism, because when were you discriminated against, being a white person? That Bakke decision, for the colleges and stuff. So and that's always played on my mind all these years, and I guess it's sort of what Mr. Williams is saying. It's kind of they're trying to reverse racism on us, saying that they're discriminated because they didn't get a slot, because you've given 20 or 25 slots to minorities, and they want all the pie instead of part of it, So he's kind of making that me kind of understand that, because I never, thought up that was just a made up term of reverse racism, and they're using it everywhere on jobs and everything to block blacks and minorities from getting in there. So.
Okay. Mr. Williams, any response?
Oh, no, sir. I've noticed that as well, over the years. And they use the exact term that Mr. McBride is referring to, reverse racism. And I've always asked them, if that's reverse racism, what's racism look like when it's going forward? And they can never provide an answer to that question that makes sense. So I definitely understand what he's saying and how white people use that to keep non-white people from getting the things that we deserve.
Okay, thank you. Professor Ra.
Just a minute.
You want me to go to somebody else?
Yeah, go to someone else right now.
Okay, Brother Hembrick.
Don't have any questions other than from the points he was making. I need a little more example of what he was, if he could give some examples. The only one I really knew right off was the jujitsu, because I know what that is. So that's it. I hear what he's saying. I just need a little more clarity and explanation.
Well, it's kind of going on right now, because even on, like, kids apply for scholarships, and they're telling them, don't, the departments, because they had a department up at Cal Berkeley, and then that was their job. We're trying to recruit as many minorities as we got so many slots for minorities, but they don't want them doing that, saying just make it wide open and don't give no preferential treatment. In other words, is what they calling this.
I'm not.
They have so many slots for blacks, and they don't want you to have any slots. And most of the colleges now, they even back there at Harvard, I see they try to pull that on them with a lot of foreign students. Trump want to fine them if they think you're doing, high minorities over whites, well, then they want to fine you for that.
That wasn't my question. I was questioning Mr. Williams.
Oh, okay.
I'm well aware of Bakke decision and all that. But some of the points that Mr. Williams was making, I wanted a little more example.
Joe, is it something specific that you need more clarity on, where he can direct that one point, so we can go move on?
I have one point. Just move on. I'm trying to take notes at the same time and getting left trying to write down the
Okay,
topic.
I'll come back to you so we can grab something that you want to get
All
more
right.
clarity on. Hey, Brother Ahi.
Yes, I think I better read Brother Fuller's books so I can ask an intelligent question. At this specific time, no.
All
I don't
right,
have any
Brother Ali.
questions. All right.
All right, thanks. Brother Mashenda?
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
All right, Professor Ra, are you ready? You're on mute.
First of all, I want to thank Brother Edwards for coming on and sharing his intellectual perspective of racism in his book. And thank Mukul for his worldly view and all the things that he does to bring light to the world. I just have a couple questions. When you say, how would you define power? You mentioned power.
There's a lot of different definitions for that. I think the Black Panther Party had a pretty good definition. The original Black Panther Party, not the ones that exist today. It's the ability to define phenomena, then in turn make it act in a desired manner.
So you accept that definition?
It's a good working definition.
Okay. The other question is that how do you think the European or the white man has been able to impose racism in a color scheme from what they call black to brown to white to yellow and, you know, and as classifications of humans? How do you see that to counter it? You know, the reason I ask you about power, because that's their ability to impose it and create the system of racism. As Dr. Francis Criswell seems to say, it's a global thing that goes over nine things. And Neely Fuller, when he talked about it in his book, Color Code, or the system of racism, countering the system of racism, the white book, the first one, I didn't see the second one. But how do you think they imposed it? How do you don't try to do the same things that they have done to throw it out the way? I understand color code from a mental standpoint, but they seem to have killing people because of their race is unique. Killing people that have not done nothing to you. And I'm not just talking about black people, Native American, Chinese, Japanese, and even killing his own people. How do you counter it if their whole thing is dropping bombs on?
Right. Good question. So they use two basic strategies, deceit, and they use words mainly to deceive people. That is their primary tool, and direct violence is their secondary tool. Now, they'd rather use deceit because it's more cost effective. When they can't deceive you, they'll come right at you and shoot you, drop bombs on you, as you've stated. And they do this back and forth all the time, 24/7, 365. Deceit itself is a form of violence. When you are fooling someone to their detriment, unjustly, you're committing violence against that person. So they use those two basic strategies. Now, to the second part of your question, how do you counter it? So the system of racism, white supremacy, as you've explained, that Dr. Welsing has written and Mr. Fuller has written, functions in the nine areas of people activity: economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Those are the nine areas that are listed in Mr. Fuller's book. And Dr. Welsing and many of her presentations have stated them as well. Right? So you attack the strategies is how you counter them. One of the strategies that the white people who practice racism, white supremacy do most often is they keep non-white people. These are the people that white people say are not white, right? They keep non-white people focused on and in conflict with each other. That's one of their strategies. And it doesn't matter if it's North Korea against South Korea, North Vietnam against South Vietnam, India against Pakistan, the Bloods against the Crips. It doesn't matter. The idea is to keep non-white people focused on and in conflict with each other. And they do this all over the world. You might have read something about the Willie Lynch letters. Some people say they don't even exist. Some people say they do exist. They say, okay, you want to keep your slaves as slaves? You pit the old slaves against the young slave. You pit the male slave against the female slave. It's the same strategy. They've been using it for hundreds of years. This is not a new thing. So the idea from their perspective is to keep people who are not white focused on and in conflict with each other. Now, that is one of their primary strategies. How do you counter that strategy? You have to make sure, as a black person, as a non-white person, that all of your interactions with other non-white people are constructive. On that alone, you're working against the system of racism, white supremacy. And that's just a basic thing that we as individual black people can do on a day-to-day basis. And there are many hundreds of things that we can do on a day-to-day basis to work against the system itself. Now, other black people may not see the value of that. But I guarantee you, the white people who practice racism, white supremacy, know that it's happening.
Okay. My question, how many books have you written?
Seven.
Okay. Are they self-published or do you have a publishing company?
Self-published, the book that we're discussing today, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy, self-published. It's on the website. And I've written a series of six children's books. I'm going through the editing on the final book
Okay.
this week.
That's good. Well, I want to congratulate you on your scholarship and your deep thinking and courageous thoughts as far as coming up with an analysis that is very interesting. All right, Rashid,
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You go ahead. Okay, Mr. Williams, I have a question. On a consistent basis, I have many people around me that are non-white that calls non-white people racist. And Neely Fuller talked extensively about that and how it's impossible, I guess with counter racist logic, how it's impossible for a non-white person to be a racist. What is your view on that?
I'd say that's absolutely correct.
And how would you kind of explain to people that may not understand that or constantly does that? What would you tell them?
I would tell them just that. Yeah, you know, that, and I'd add a little flesh on those bones, of course. I've heard white people actually say that, and not necessarily in reference to me, but in hearing those conversations, I would interject myself and say, okay, well, it's impossible for me to be a racist because I'm not a member of a race. That catches white people totally off guard because they don't have a response to that. That is the truth. I am a victim of race, not a member of race, right? So they will respond, well, you're a black person, aren't you? I say, yeah, I'm a black person, but I'm not a member of no race. You know, if you're a member of a race, you're a racist. That is counter-racism logic. So the truth just totally obliterates all the deception right off the bat.
Interesting. Okay, thank you. I'm gonna go back to Brother Hembrick. Oh, I have a question from Brother Ahi. Brother Ahi, can you unmute and ask that question, please?
Does the current assault on the Constitution, the testing of it, the limits, and affect its usefulness for us as an effective tool?
Good question. No, sir, it doesn't. If you'll get a copy of the book, it explains the focus is the 5th and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution. The 5th Amendment focuses on what is called due process, which I have used in meetings and things of that nature, defined as doing things in the correct way. Now, there are times that there's opposition to that, and people say, well, that's not what it means at all. And so then I'll ask a question, does it mean doing things in an incorrect way? Because it's either one or the other. You know, it ain't no splitting the difference. You know. And of course the 14th Amendment is equal protection of the law. And the book explains, it even has some examples of how I've used the 5th and the 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution on the job to get training on the job when, you know, it's stated that, you know, funding for training is very limited, but you see other people getting it, but it's all of a sudden it's limited for us. Right. And different other examples, in the book as well. But, you support the United States Constitution by using it. Every time you use it, you're supporting it. You defend it by not allowing anyone else to misuse it. That's the idea on supporting it and defending it.
What's the effect that Trump is going to have? That's what I want to ask you on how we view the Constitution.
Well, he's not going to change the Constitution. So the idea is that you take something, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be the Constitution, it could be something else. It doesn't matter. You take something that the smartest, most powerful white people have put in place and says, we are living by this, whatever it is, doesn't matter. And when they say we are living by this, they're talking about white people. They're not talking about us. So you take that, whatever it is, and use it to apply to you, to keep you from being harmed. That's the whole purpose of the book. It was just, I wrote the book, like I said, started writing it back in 2005. Got it copyrighted in 2007, I believe it was. Because I was in a position on the job where things were happening to me that should not have been happening. And I began to run experiments on the job. Like I said before, that's a scary thing. If you get nervous easily, don't do it on a job because, yeah, that is nerve-wracking. But it can be any tool. The United States Constitution is just one of the tools. It could be any tool that white people have put in place that says, we're going to live by this, we're not going to change this, but they won't say that it doesn't apply to black people, even though they know that it's written in such a way that it doesn't apply to black people. So you begin to use that as a tool, just like many other tools, to make sure that you're not harmed. Now, the system of racism, white supremacy, functions such that all non-white people qualify to be harmed. That's the way it functions. So when you begin to use these tools to work against the system, they immediately become aware that, hey, there's something different about this person. Other black people, they don't say things like this, they don't do things like this. So they will play the percentages. Instead of attempting to harm you so much, they'll go to other black people and harm them more. So the idea is to get as many black people as you can. I think Mr. Fuller's book refers to it as a substantial number or something to that effect. As many black people as you can to use these tools, many tools, to work against the system of racism, white supremacy.
Okay, thank you, Brother Ahi. Brother Hembert.
Back when he was talking about race and he said that he's not of a human race, what did he mean? And also when he first began speaking, he was talking about conscious people. I can't recall exactly what he said, but he was making reference to conscious people versus another mind thought type people.
Okay. According to counter-racism logic, there's no such thing as a human race. Race itself is racism, and racism is white supremacy. In order to be a human, also according to counter-racism logic, there are no humans on this planet. A human is a humane person. Humane people don't mistreat each other. And humane people help the people who need help the most to get the most constructive help. That is what humanity is all about. Anytime you hear people throwing around the word humanity, that is what they're talking about. They don't say that, but listen at the words that are being used and how they're being used. That is what they're talking about. So having the word human and the word race put together, it cancels each other out. There's no such thing as that.
Okay.
There is only one race on this planet, and that race consists of the white people who mistreat people based on color. All of the white people who mistreat people based on color are members of the white race. That's the only race in existence, according to counter-racism logic. Now, the second part of your question, I don't believe I made reference to a conscious person or a person of another type of mindset. I'll rarely use the word conscious in reference to people at all. But if you can explain a little further, I may be able to answer that question for you.
Well, you used it in the beginning when you first started speaking. You were talking about black people being conscious, and they need to move from being conscious to something else. I guess that's what you're talking about with your code, all of that. I believe that's what you were referring to.
I think I understand the question. So what I referred to as Afrocentric, right? And you interpreted that to mean conscious. I was referring to me as an individual person. There are different periods in my life. One period in my life I referred to as my Afrocentric period. And there is a period in my life that I referred to as my counter-racism period. I am almost out of that period. Probably all the way out. But it does not prevent me from practicing counter-racism. It does not prevent me from producing a system of justice as an individual. So when I say Afrocentric period, I'm referring to me. If anyone else has a period in their life that they refer to as Afrocentric, then they're talking about them. There's no way that I or anyone else, any one other individual, can speak for all black people and say that they're conscious or not. I don't do that kind of intellectual masturbation. I don't participate in that. I hope I answered your question, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, you have to.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Brother Muko, I'll turn it back over to you.
Appreciate those questions and your detailed answers, Mr. Williams. I was in reading your work, which I say is definitely detailed when you actually pay close attention to the words that you're using. You explain a method that non-white people will have to use when exercising counter-racist jujitsu, and this behavioral system that you describe racism, white supremacy as. And I definitely appreciate those words and how you describe or put in detail how this is so, according to the evidence. Would you explain to the listeners your explanation on how you came to the point that racism, white, the system, the global system of racism, white supremacy, is yet a behavioral system first, and those methods that we should use to practice that technique successfully as far as counter-racist jujitsu?
Okay. The worldwide system of racism, white supremacy being a behavioral system is not unique to my thought process. Mr. Fuller has said it and talked about it. Dr. Welsing talked about it many times. I went to attended a lot of her Welsing Institute gatherings at Howard University when she was alive. Basically, keeping things in their simplest form, what is meant by that is racism, white supremacy is the mistreatment of people based on color. That's in its simplest form. You look at Mr. Fuller's book, he's got definitions for racism, definitions for white supremacy. Dr. Welsing talked about it a lot. With her definitions, which were expansive of Mr. Fuller's de definitions, but essentially it's the mistreatment of people based on color. Meaning, there is something that white people have to do that results in the mistreatment of people based on color. When I say do, I mean say or do. Saying is doing, and doing is doing. So it's the behavior of the white people who practice racism, white supremacy, that keeps the system going. And a lot of black people don't like to talk about this, but it's also the behavior of black people subjected to that mistreatment that also keeps the system going. It's both. So any if there are any white people, like a 2-day-old white person, a baby that was just born, there's not much that they can say or do that results in black people m being mistreated based on color. Logically speaking, or you may have a white person that's 110 years old that, can't feed themselves. They sit all day looking into space. Now, they may have been a racist white supremacist their whole life, but at this particular time, there's nothing that they can say or do that results in the mistreatment of people based on color. So that is two examples. And Mr. Fuller has given those examples and other examples as well as since they can't exhibit the behavior that results in people being mistreated based on color, then it's logically sound that they are not a 2-day-old baby and a 110-year-old white person. It's logically sound that they are not racist white supremacists. Now, there are people who will say all white people are racist. And so I don't argue with that. That's their viewpoint. And that keeps the conflict down between non-white people as well. So by not arguing that point, I'm actually working against the system of racism, white supremacy.
Roger, he had a question about the book. I've been looking online on Amazon trying to find it.
Oh, yes, sir. You can only find it on the counter-racism website. There's a mall link there. Counter-racism mall. Counter-racism.com.
Brother Hembrick, I put it up a few times. It's right here.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, it's on the website. Counter-racism.
Okay.
Okay, Brother Muko.
Yeah. Counter-racism. Oh, go ahead. I'm about to
Yeah,
let you.
This presentation, this conversation has been extraordinary to me personally. And I don't know how much time Mr. Williams have, but we can continue or end it and possibly have him back if that's possible. So I don't know what direction we want to move from this point.
Well, I can stay about 10 more minutes, and I'd welcome the opportunity to come back at any time I'm asked to do so.
Well, I appreciate that. Definitely want you to come back. All right, Brother
Absolutely.
Muko, I'll let you continue.
Okay, well, I know my fellow attempted counter-racist scientist is definitely pressed for time, so I'll ask one more question, and I'll let this. Yeah.
Hold. I want to see if Professor Ra had something else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm muted.
When Dr. Frances Press Wilson gave Nita Fuller credit for opening her eyes to racism. And then she also said it's about genetic.
Professor Rock, you have the background
Okay.
going. Can you turn that off, please?
Yeah. So I forgot to. She argued that it's about genetic annihilation. When, if that is correct, it's beyond a system. It's a biological and physiological problem, or from the standpoint of creating the fear, the paranoia, and the annihilation of other races so that you can exist as white people. How do you deal with that in your counter code, or do you deal with it at all?
Yes, sir. Another good question. Not at all. Not at all. I take from Mr. Fuller's work what I can use, and I take from Dr. Welsing's work what I can use, and I take from anyone else's work. I've read many books in the past, what I can use to produce a system of justice. I don't argue that one person is right about this or the other person is right about that. As I stated earlier in the program, myself and others have gotten Mr. Fuller to change some things that were in his first book that were changed in his second book. So I don't say either is right, neither is wrong. I went to Mr. Fuller's presentations, same way I went to Dr. Wilson's presentations. I sponsored a presentation from Mr. Fuller before. I have my own thoughts about all of it. But when it comes to pointing out this is right or that's wrong or things of that nature, I can no longer do that with Mr. Fuller and with Dr. Welsing because they're no longer here. So I take from their work what I can use and use it to the best of my ability.
Okay, thank you. Hey,
Yes,
Rob,
sir.
I muted you. Rob, I muted you because the noise was still in the background. So you unmute. You want to respond?
I was going. How do when it comes to Dr. Francis Crest Wilson's theory on the ball games and the guns and the perspective that she had, she also argued that racism is a global dynamic as far as its existence. And as you were saying that, there's no human race. But J. Rogers in his book, Superman to Man, he argued that there's only one race, and that is the human race. I don't know if you read that book by J. Rogers, because he wrote the book Great Men of Color. Are you saying that there's no color, no such thing as color?
No, sir. I'm not saying that at all.
I mean, of humans, of people, not humans, because you said you don't believe in humans. Because they're not humane. That's right.
Yes, human is the root word for the word humane.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Brother Muko, you want to close us out?
Yes, definitely. Extraordinary broadcast. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to leave with one question. Well, actually, question to Mr. Edwards, but kind of like a statement. But yeah, well, a statement and a question. You made a statement in your profound work that all victims of racism, white supremacy should have a pocket size, carrying size, or even wallet size copy of the Constitution. And this being my last question, could you explain and state why you suggest so?
Oh,
Which I
yes.
agree.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I only suggest so if you plan to use the strategies and techniques in this particular book. If you plan to use the 5th and 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, if you plan to support and defend the United States Constitution, then it's a good idea to have a copy of it at all times.
Wow, apologies. That was going to be very, very profound piece of work. I suggest everybody, all victims of racism, white supremacy, if you can see clearly, you get yourself a copy of this astronomical work, How to Support and Defend the United States Constitution for Victims of Racism, White Supremacy. I want to thank Mr. Edward Williams for your time, your effort, your work, and yes, we would definitely love to have you on again and possibly discussing some of those children's books. I mean, I think that is very, very profound to teach your children about racism, white supremacy as young as they can make sounds. And to hear that, you have worked for children. And to see how profound this work is, and it's such a small read. I mean, this isn't anything but, I mean, it's not even 200 pages. Everybody, this is the most powerful 150 page read that I have seen since I say biography of Malcolm X. But anyway, yeah, thank you for joining us, and thank you, Mr. Edward Williams, for your time. And we would definitely like to see you back again, and even to discuss this work even in more detail, because believe it or not, we didn't even get halfway through this work. But even then, what we discussed really cleared up a lot of things for me. I hope it was constructive for the rest of the care unit. So yeah, thank you, Mr. Williams, and thank you, care unit members, for participating. Mr. Rashik is back over to you, bro.
Well, I appreciate it, Brother Muko, for blessing us with Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams, thank you for coming this evening, and we definitely want to get you back. And yes, I'm interested in the children's books also. Okay, good folks. I appreciate everybody for coming tonight. Next week, we have Dr. Leslie Carnegie. She's an author and a professor, and she's one of the directors at Duke University. So we're having her on next week, and that should be a treat for us. All right, each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Professor Rod, anybody for next week, or are we going to repeat the same thing?
The thing, we got to
Okay.
talk about the people calling us monkeys
Okay. Yeah.
and
So
gorillas.
it's the same, because we didn't have the show last night, so we postponed it to next week. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank
Everybody
you.
have a continue to have a great day.
Yeah.
Thank you all. Thank you.